the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And I'm Charlie McCarron.
And today we're doing our last game in card shedding series. This one's going to be Custom Heroes, which is a little bit older game. It's one of my favorite games that actually includes card crafting. I'll say favorite. I love card crafting games in general. But just to give you kind of an overview of how this game plays, there is a single deck that is split amongst all of the players, played over a number of hands. And every hand, you are going to be improving those cards in some way with the clear cards, using the kind of card crafting mechanic.
Which is card sleeves, and you slide in.
Clear cards going over solid cards in a card sleeve. You can layer up to four of them on one card, so it can really change what they are. Each kind of solid card is a number between 1 and 10, and you have a set of those cards for each player involved in the deck. But you're randomly dealt the cards, so you won't know exactly what cards you have in hand. So more players means more chances for, you know, maybe having four fives or something higher than that. Since we only had three of us, we only got three, you know, three of a kind of anything. But yeah, it's a really interesting game. It's played over multiple rounds. Whoever ends up with basically 10 victory points at the end of the game is the winner. And as long as they are also the player who's won the hand, who's gotten first place in the hand. So there's a lot of kind of more specific, you know, point scoring and using coins to activate abilities on cards. But all cards start with nothing. They're all blank, just a number. And then as you play the game, you kind of alter the cards, make advancements happen. You know, the highest number is 10. That could go up to 14, 15. You could even have modifiers on that to go even further than that. And it just gets a little bit ridiculous, which is kind of fun. It's A little silly. It does call itself a trick-taking game. I definitely consider it more of a ladder-climbing game because you're actually, like, you're limited to playing the number of cards that the first player played each round. And so each hand is made up of a number of rounds, and a round is made up of a number of turns. It's a little bit silly with how they've labeled it, but I'm all for it. I'm all here. But yeah, so if you've won the round, then the deck clears. And you can choose how many cards you're going to play for the next one as long as they're the same number. So no runs in this one. It has to be of a kind. There are cards out there that can be, or, you know, card advancements that can make cards wild or adjust them so they match other numbers. And you can just apply those freely as long as you have the advancement in front of you.
Yeah. And the cool thing about those advancements is that you can play them at any time.
Yeah.
So it's always this sinking feeling when you play something that you think like, oh yeah, nobody's gonna beat two tens, and yeah, then someone's like, wait just a second,
plus four to my six. That's still two tens at least. Interesting thing really quick, if you match the number of the previous player, that skips the next player's turn, which is an interesting little mechanic that Charlie experienced an
favorite
awful lot
part of this game.
My takeaway actually is that
I skipped Charlie a lot.
Yeah, yes. It happened a lot. I do wonder if that's better in a four-player game or something, where this doesn't get in the cycle of skipping. But regardless, it's got some cool twists. And the advancements that you're adding sometimes have some fun twists. Like my favorite one was... actually the lowest card wins, so the you have to start counting down, so you're usually counting up, and then I kept a hand of like 1, 2, and 4 just so that I could play that just to
that's brilliant.
Mess with Trevor.
Well, and it's fun too because like you could put that starts because it switches the direction, so you could actually have two cards in the same pile that switch the direction and have it go back up again as long as that card met the rule of the previous direction you were going in. So it's very simple game at first. Like that first hand, you're like, well, this is kind of boring. And then you actually start advancing and getting more advancements. And then it gets just really dynamic and weird.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the progression for me is that in the short term, you know, you have these cards that are resources that you can slot in to do something right now. And then that leads to progression for the game as a whole. Because you aren't necessarily going to get those cards back. They're going to be shuffled and dealt out. So any card you upgrade, somebody else may get.
Right.
So there's no personal progression, really, but there is progression for the game as a whole. The game as a whole feels different every round.
Very dynamic.
Yeah. Which seems to be enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, personal progression is maybe not so necessary as long as you have the game as a whole progressing. People just want it to feel different.
Well, and it's interesting, too, based on your placement of, you know, who won and who, or, you know, did you get first, second, third, fourth, etc., that changes your rewards. So the highest gets, you know, more victory points, effectively, but the lower tiers get more advancement cards that they can apply to any card in the future. So they have more flexibility for the next round.
Yeah.
Which I think is a nice little catch-up mechanic. You know, it's a little bit in your face as a catch-up mechanic, but I don't necessarily hate that.
It. I mean, we were talking about this earlier. It kind of feels like fishing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
The game fishing.
Freedom and freeze, trick-taking game, yeah. And that feeling of like, oh, you're pulling out some advancement that you have no idea what it is and everyone else doesn't. But once it's slotted in, then next round you might get it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like how fishing, you have new cards coming out that are entering the pool.
Yeah. And I think that is my takeaway for this game, is the limited pool of cards that keep coming out. Because it's almost more interesting than in a game where you're just doing your own thing, in a way. Because, I don't know. It is very satisfying in a deck builder to build up your own deck and you know what cards are coming. But I don't know. There's kind of like a fun meta to this where it's like, oh, I know I added a 14 and I didn't get it this time. So I know one of you guys has it. Yeah. So I think there's probably like on multiple plays a deeper experience.
Too. Oh, for right. sure.
Because unlike fishing, you're going to see all of the cards every round. Whereas in fishing, some of the cards are going to be buried during the round. So you might not see them for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say this game refers to itself as a trick-taking game, which... We kind of disagree with that a little bit, but it does have a lot of similarities in that you do end up taking the round, and there are kind of advancement cards that use that mechanic to trigger other effects, which I think is kind of interesting how they use that to integrate things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The cards have special abilities where to use them, you have to pay I don't know what these are. They're pentagons. They're little cardboard
pentagons. We'll call them coins. They call them tokens.
Okay, tokens. Yeah. Sure, coins. So you have to pay coins to use them, or you can choose not to use them and get a coin.
Yeah.
Which can add up to give you a victory point, because you can turn in 4 coins for a victory point. Which makes sense. Those powers aren't always going to be useful.
Yeah.
And you know, you can, so if you don't have use for it, there's something else you can do with it, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm.
And I also appreciate that each card, or advancement, I should say, the clear cards that go over the base cards, there's 4 different types, and they're based off of a little round sphere at the bottom, or a little round, you know, circle at the bottom of the card. And that actually also determines where the artwork will be on the card, so that as you're adding these cards to the base cards, it starts to flesh out like the art for this new advanced version, and it gets wonky. You start holding swords or having bows or flowers.
Yeah.
Like, it's just gets really...
I like that the art for each of these characters was positioned so that
the hands, it doesn't look like they're
missing something in their hands, but it does look like, oh, the sword fits there.
Well, and they're like... Their main bodies are in different positions, so they don't look like they're in the exact same pose every time.
Yeah.
And so, like, it makes it feel really dynamic with the art, and then you just... My favorite one didn't come up. There is a foam finger in here that I just think is hilarious, because you have, like, these swords and mystical things happening, and then you have a foam finger, and it's so silly.
Yeah. No, I like that system they have of the 4 different color... gems at the bottom, because
they can't overlap, so you can't have 2 of the same gem,
right? Yeah, and basically that limits you, because one of the yellow gem or whatever has all the text effects,
right?
I noticed, so you can't ever cover a text effect with
another
one.
Sense.
Yep.
But Yeah, the card crafting I'd be curious to talk about a little bit too, because so this is the same designer, John DeClair, who did Mystic Veil as well, which is the first one I saw anyways, but that one's deck building where you're adding, and I think there's three columns on each card that you can add to.
Yeah, three rows.
Three rows, yeah, thanks.
Yep.
And the, yeah, that was a cool one too, and I'm curious if this came out after that or before.
Ooh. And I mean, it's all AEG too, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I know it was like they were gearing up for another game that was going to use card crafting and trying to get card crafting to be more mainstream. Mm. So more people were familiar so they could, you know, have a lesser hurdle to learn the more advanced game that they were working on.
Yeah.
So I believe that was the case. And I know that from a source that I cannot say who, but yeah, it's really interesting how, you know, these kind of mechanics can show up and then we get better at them as designers and players, and that causes them to evolve over time.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, more fun with them. We play with them more, but then do we leave out other players who are just coming into the hobby or into that kind of game when we have these more advanced versions that, and they're not ready for it yet? Do they have to do the progression or can they jump right in to this new advanced version? So it's really, I don't know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And there's obviously some other clear card games too that don't necessarily use
Gloom.
Sleeves, but yeah, Gloom I think was probably the first one I saw that had that, but it's a cool thing.
I love card crafting. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's something that it's harder in board games than in video games. In video games, you know, I think it's especially with roguelike deck builders, it's increasingly common to have card crafting aspects, you know, like
Slay the Spire.
Well, yeah, the new Slay the Spire 2.
I did get that finally.
But yeah, yes, it's pretty good. but, you know, the original Slay the Spire had card upgrades, of course,
right,
which are one type of card crafting. But Slay the Spire 2 now introduces these also tiny modifiers that you can add.
Little augments.
Yeah, which are also fun. Yeah, being able to customize your cards is super fun, and it's nice that there is a way to do that with board games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to card sleeves.
Or stickers. Like,
stickers.
So,
like Legacy.
Seafall, legacy games, Seafall, Gloomhaven have like little upgrades you can do. Those feel really good too when you know you're going to be playing multiple games with these cards. It's like,
that's my characters. Cursed blade now because it's been cursed. It's like, it creates stories. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. I really like it.
Yeah. This is a little bit off topic maybe, but I'm sure I've seen like, aren't there stickers that stick to things without needing adhesive? Like, that are...
Kind of the vinyl...
Yeah.
Or...
I don't know how they work, like, with... I don't know whether it's static electricity or some weird surface thing, but I'm sure I've seen a long time ago stickers that you can just peel off things and they're not sticky. There's just something about the surface.
I think they have a hard time maybe being shuffled in like a deck.
Sure, yeah. I guess that would be a problem.
Technically, like, so Cozy Stickerville, new one that our studio's making or has made, those stickers I think can actually be pulled off of the map if you want it to.
Oh, okay.
So it might just be that they just are regular stickers that just don't leave as much of a mess. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe sticker technology has moved these days. I don't know.
We're in the sticker age, really.
Sure, I've seen this a while ago. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I have a takeaway for this game, which is the victory condition. Mm. So your objective in this game is you need to get 10, what are they, triangles?
Red triangle. I can't remember.
10 triangles to win. Points. We'll just call them points.
10 points.
You need 10 points to win, but you also have to come in first in that round. So you need to reach the threshold and come in first. And this, I think, is actually really good because one very common problem in board games is that one player may rush ahead and may be way ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, they're obviously going to win because, you know, even if we do better, even if they just get a couple points each round, it's inevitable.
Right.
And this solves that problem because you can still get far ahead in this game and, you know, you can have lots more points than everyone else. But it's not enough if you don't come in first in a round. So players have a chance to catch up because it could be that you just get stuck at 10 for a while and are not able
to... Keep getting second place.
You keep getting second place. Yeah. And it works really well to keep the tension up.
Yeah.
I think it's a great general solution that I could probably be applied to a lot of games is... You know, have some threshold you need to reach to win, but then also require some short-term achievement once you've reached that threshold to seal the victory, and then other players have a chance to catch up. So,
yeah,
I like that.
I do like that a lot. For my takeaway, I'm actually going to focus on the card crafting a little bit, and I noticed this with Mystic Veil too, but it seems like when you have card crafting in a game, you really actually want to focus on keeping the cards the same every time so that you don't increase the number of cards that come into the game. You're changing the cards, and that is what creates the interest and intrigue. You don't, like, having a single... Like, in Mystic Veil, you have 20 cards. And it's only 20 cards. It's always 20 cards. You don't get more cards, you don't get less cards. But then you upgrade some, don't upgrade others. Like, and then with this, you have one deck of 10 times the number of players, and it's always going to be that. And so, like, it just feels nice that you have this, like, parameter that you're working in, and then you get to be creative in this parameter.
That makes sense. The customization is what is on the cards, so you don't need to add new cards.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like, the equivalent, I guess, is in deck builders when you're equally culling as many cards as you're gaining.
Yeah. But that's part of strategy with deck builders, is you're trying to...
Yeah, in deck builders, the change is in the deck, not in the cards themselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it creates combos, which are always can make you feel clever.
Gotta love combos.
The funny thing in this game is, I made this great combo on one card, and then the next round, Ananda used it against me, of course.
Uh-huh.
Like, upgraded a 5 to a 10, and made it a double of itself.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, crazy.
Perfect.
Yep. Well, cool. I think that wraps it up for Custom Heroes. And tune in next time when we do our wrap-up episode on card-shedding games.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends... and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.